Hi, welcome to the Parasocial Social Club.
I'm Charlie James.
I'm Jewel Karenin.
And we're your hosts.
And this podcast is all about exploring the incredible, amazing power of parasocial relationships.
We investigate our own parasocial relationships and interview the people we all have parasocial relationships with.
Today, our guest of parasocial honor is Making It star Jess Lamworth.
We chat about how crafting got a bad name, a bacon bikini,
and some extremely juicy behind the scenes about being a reality TV contestant.
Welcome to the Parasocial Social Club. Hi, everybody.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We're so excited that it's out and that you guys are listening to it.
If you want to help support the show, please leave a 5-star rating on Spotify or 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, we really want to see those stars, and we really want the powers that be to help share the podcast to the algorithm.
That would mean so much. Ugh, the algorithm.
I know, very powerful.
I love her. I want to be on her side.
I love when we...
And be her friend.
Love when we discuss the algorithm. Anyways, please do it. We really, really love to see the reviews, and it's a really easy way to support the podcast.
It's free.
And maybe we'll read some. I don't know. We're going to discuss it later.
Yeah, if
we're
going to discuss good it ones, later. You're right.
Okay. We're going to discuss it off camera.
Right.
And today, our interview was so good that we're just going to go straight into it. Enjoy.
Yay.
Forgot to tell Jess before we start?
No.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Okay, everyone. I am so excited to introduce our guest for this episode of the Parasocial Social Club, Jess Lamworth. Jess is an absurdly talented artist, sculptor, and art director for film and TV. You may have seen her amazing work across social media, where she posts super creative and delightful projects, like her viral t-shirt video. That's T, spelled T-E-A.
I saw it.
And handmade Cheeto jackets, waffle crop tops. You may have also seen her work as previous art director of Good Mythical Morning. And this is a huge moment for me, personally. This is our very first reality TV contestant guest. I'm so excited.
Huge for Jewel.
I'm so excited. Jess was one of the stars of NBC's Making It season 3. Jess, you are a parasocial icon. Welcome to the podcast.
Wow. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
As you can tell, I'm so excited you're here.
Yeah, from reality. The biggest reality TV show sweeping the nation. Everyone's heard of it. It's definitely still running.
Get canceled?
I think it just kind of...
Rest in peace. Good night.
3 seasons, good run, though.
Very good run.
Yeah, I think so, too. And very beloved, you know? Like, fans are good fans of that show.
And perhaps they ran out of stars after you.
Yeah, they couldn't top
they couldn't season find 3. They couldn't find anyone else.
They should just do all stars, but run back the cast of season 3.
Yes, exactly.
They should.
Call Amy Poehler.
Excellent. Tell her. At Amy Poehler. Tag her in the comments of the podcast. All right, Jess, you have a very interesting career, and you use your creativity in film and TV and in social media and lots of different areas. Can you talk to us a little bit about where did this all begin?
I mean, I've always been a creative person, like, since childhood, but that was never really the path that I thought I would go on. I actually was... like end of high school was like slated to go to college for engineering. I was like in a biomedical engineering track. Whoa. Like did lab work at Johns Hopkins. I'm actually a published author in the Journal of Immunology.
Whoa.
and because I had gotten in into college early decision, I just kind of had like a semester of high school to be like, oh, I could just like take a fun class, like I'll do art. And it was like a senior show, like I actually put on like a full like gallery show, and that's when all of my like my teachers and friends and parents and everyone was kind of like, oh, you're really good at that, you should actually you should do that. I'm like, no, like art, that's not real, like, you know, I'm going into school for engineering. But that kind of like cued to me that I should actually keep that up in some capacity. It made me happy. It made me feel like I was actually expressing myself. Whereas doing lab research was just like pipetting over and over again.
Right.
I graduated college and went into business consulting and was kind of still doing like art on the side then. That's kind of when I like started to do some more like side gig work for brands and different companies who wanted social media content, and also did like commissions for people. But I was so sick of that that I quit my job in September of 2019 and moved home for like, I had this plan of doing like 6 months, make a like art portfolio, apply to more creative jobs, maybe like an agency, maybe apply to grad school or something. And then the pandemic hit. But that's when I got cast on Making It.
That's crazy.
yeah. So sorry. Sorry to be like such a big, like overview of the path. But yeah, definitely lots of twists and turns, and all of them have kind of like influenced my work today. But yeah, it still is a winding road of, you know, who knows where I'll be next year, right, or whenever. But yeah, I've always been a creative person. That's kind of how it all started.
And how did you get cast on Making It? Did they reach out to you? Did you submit yourself?
So I was home during the pandemic. My boyfriend of 5 years broke up with me. My childhood dogs, both of them died within the span of like a week. And the pandemic broke out like all in like the same, like March 2020. I remember it so well. And I was like, life sucks. And also that month, I got this weird DM on my Instagram account that was like, hi, I'm Allison from this show called Making It. I'm a casting director. I think you would be so good on this show. Click this link and apply here. I'm like, that's so fake. Like, oh my God, I'm being fished or whatever. Like, this is... But I had nothing else to do. So,
you're like, I'll get fished.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we'll do it for the bit. We'll see what happens. I recorded a video. I sent it in. And fast forward, it ended up being like a 9-month casting process. But
that makes sense, given the time period.
Yeah, they kept pushing back when they were going to record it. Yeah, they flew me out to LA and I spent 6 months on the NBC Universal Studios lot.
Wait, a 6 month process? 6 months?
Oh, sorry, weeks. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
That's crazy.
Yeah, for a moment I was like, hang on.
Sorry. Six weeks.
6 weeks.
Which is still kind of long, you know, for a show that's, it's like 30 minute episodes and I think there are only 8 of them.
Yeah.
But a lot of work went into it. And a lot of people, amazing, amazing people were behind that show. And that's also what inspired me to move out to LA. Like, I had no idea the film and TV industry existed and that art department was a thing. It's such an amazing, like, thing to work on. And the people who work in art department are truly the best. Like,
yes, they're
so, they're so generous. I'm always, every new person I meet who works in art department is just like, you know, let's work together in some capacity. And that really feels like, that was the first time I really felt like, oh, these are my people, you know, like growing up on the East Coast and being a daughter of a doctor and a lawyer and like going to a college where most people went into finance or, you know, more or like, you know, even like nonprofit organizations, stuff, very bureaucratic, like just nothing as creative as I wanted.
Right.
And then just being exposed to this world was just like, it was amazing. It was so life-changing.
That's very magical.
Yeah.
Wow. That's like a really excellent reality TV show to get dropped into as opposed to like getting into like Love Island or something.
Right. I know. There was, again, when I got reached out to you on Instagram, I was like, reality TV competition. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd grown up watching Project Runway,
totally,
which is an amazing show, but you can tell people are broken on that show.
Yeah, it's so stressful
they get stressed to the point where their like creativity is kind of broken down, and I didn't want that to happen to me. I didn't want to, like, I'm a very anxious person. I take things very personally, unfortunately. And you know, I was like, do I really want to do this? Do I really want my work and myself, on display for kind of, you know, the producers or, and the editors to like take however they want it and to do whatever they want with it. But I'd watched the first two seasons and they make every single person on that show seem pleasant and lovely, right, and interesting, and like you want to love them. And because of that, I was like, oh, that, you know, I can trust this show and I can feel good about being on the show. And it really is like one of the best things I've ever done in my life. I'm so grateful I had the opportunity, and like I met and made the most amazing friends and learned so much from it. So
that's actually what you mentioned is something I wanted to ask about. Like, did you feel burnout when you were on the show, like having to be in the sort of contained bubble of creativity?
I never felt burnout, which is so interesting because I feel like I switch careers or like switch interests every like 2 years seems to be my max. And then I'm like, let's do something completely different. I think it was like the perfect amount of time and like the perfect storm of like just being challenged in like a time squeeze, yeah, because you have just enough time to get the thing done, but not enough time to second guess yourself. And that was, I learned so much from that because so much of my creative process is me second guessing myself, mm-hmm, is like hating the stuff that I'm working on and being like imagining every single possible iteration of a person out there being like, this is why I hate this. This is why this is bad. This is, you know? Yeah. But on making it, I had there was no opportunity for that. It was just go, just go and make. And, yeah, I think I try to like, you know, tap into that more in my day-to-day process, and I think I'm a better creative as a result of that.
That's amazing. Wow, I'm so happy and also confused to hear about a great reality TV experience.
There definitely were some aspects of, so there are these like story producers who do the interviews, and it would be pretty clear like when you were going to get eliminated because they'd be like, looking back at your time, like what was something that you really, and I'm like,
looking back,
what? Yeah. I'm like, what's going on? Oh my gosh. It's also so funny when the first episode came out, and I had like a watch party with all my friends, and it was very fun, but it was also, everyone was kind of like, why is everyone crying on the first episode? What did they do to you?
Totally.
It's like, well, what they did to us was in the middle of the pandemic, they took us all away from our families, uh-huh, put us in this bubble. We couldn't like talk to anyone for like 2 weeks while we were quarantining, and then forced us into this like, go be the most creative you've ever done. Like, make the best thing you've ever made, and you might actually go home. This might all be for nothing.
Right.
Totally.
Of course people are going to be sobbing. And then they also ask, like, do you miss your family? And like,
yes.
We're, like, sleep deprived. We're, like, so, we're just so stressed out. Like, any tiny little trigger is just, like, tears. And what they don't show you, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but, like, it's not writing anymore, so it's fine. They cut it, so it's just like, and maybe, and like one of you will go home, but in the real show, they're like, you're in the bottom, you're in the bottom, you're in the bottom.
Whoa.
And here's why. Like, this is what sucked about your project. This is what was bad. We hated this. And so, and that's when they like zoom into your like three different people's faces that you're like, huh, like, oh, those people seem really sad. Like, they must know, like, or like they must feel bad about their projects. Like, yeah, because they just made us feel horrible.
Oh, and they don't cut that in?
No, because like, yeah.
It's a wholesome
and
show.
I was one of those people who was in the bottom three for the first episode. And so I really thought I was going to go home after the first episode. Like, no one remembers anyone who goes away and who gets eliminated
sad
first.
To say night one, guys.
True. Right?
That's what we,
yeah,
call them in the Bachelor world.
Same, no one remembers them. And I was like,
if you
that
leave
would
Survivor
be
the first day. I'm like, who was that?
Right. Yeah. No clue. And my friends are like, why are you crying? Like, your thing was cool. Like,
because they told me to be upset.
They were like, you used hot glue, and like, if that goes in the sun, it'll melt. I'm like, everyone used hot glue. What are you talking about? Why are you being mean to me?
You gave us hot glue.
It's like the only crafting material we have.
Okay, well, good to know there's a little bit of manipulation,
yes,
still going on.
Yeah,
that makes
definitely
me feel great.
It was so, leading up to it, my like biggest nightmare. Because also the casting process was so long. They didn't let us know that we were chosen to be on the show until 3 days before they flew us out.
Oh my gosh.
It was three days.
That's not and there enough
were,
time.
No. And there were like, at first I think there were, it was like a pool of 30. But then when they pushed back filming, they're like, oh, well, like, we'll let more people apply. We'll like get the best of the best. We'll get more people. Then it was like 60. And then it was back down to 30. And then there were finally, I think there were still 30 in like this final boot camp process they had us go through. And they also had us interview in groups and like see the group dynamics and stuff
toxic,
like that.
Toxic.
And it was clear based on like what they were kind of like responding well to, the casting people, that they wanted us to be like cheerful, happy, friendly, like getting along with everyone really well. And I'm a friendly person, but there are some times when, you know, competition gets the best of me or like I just get frustrated with people. And so I know I had that inside me, but it was my biggest fear that that would come out. I would literally like, I would like wake up in the middle of the night from a nightmare where like I was on the show and I like said something mean and they're like, you have to leave now. Like this
you
isn't
too mean.
Yeah. It was like my worst fear.
That's so funny. Cause like so many reality TV shows that's built in.
Oh yeah.
Where they're like,
we want
someone who's evil and we're going to make them the villain of the show. And meanwhile, you're like, if I make a small transgression,
yes, I'm going to be sent home. Like they'll never choose me. I have to be like perfect, friendly, nice.
This is so 60 is so many.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting it to be that large.
So many people also didn't know they were going to be on the show.
Yeah.
3 days before.
Yeah.
That's so many.
And they had two, I forget what they call them, not extras, but like backup people who get flown out, do the whole quarantine thing just in case like someone else dropped out for whatever reason. And like, you know, low key, they are hoping someone drops out.
Yeah.
then they just go back home and they're like this close. They
I'm
don't
sure
get
they're
to
like,
the show.
You're on season four. It's okay.
Yeah. Right.
Any
day.
Okay. We're going to get back to more of your time on making it and building an audience. But first, let's do our job.
Yeah.
It's time
let's
to do our
this.
Job.
Okay. So listen, a parasocial relationship is a one-sided relationship in which we are feeling invested in a relationship with someone who does not know us at all.
We develop illusions of intimacy, friendship, and identification with a media persona, like being a fan or being really invested in a famous actor or a pop star. So that's what a parasocial relationship is. Had you heard of this before we asked you to come on our podcast?
I had. My friend showed me this song by Dodie. Do you guys know Dodie?
Yeah.
Yes.
She wrote this song called Parasocial Promise or something.
And Dodie? Come on the show.
Dodie? Yeah.
No, see, it's like she talks about it a lot. Like I haven't really watched a lot of her YouTube episodes, but I really should. But she talks about how she was kind of like parasocially interested in someone, but then also like, of course, being a 2 million follower YouTube person, like she gets a lot of people who have parasocial relationships, but the song goes like, it's better to just be a fan.
Completely.
So I kind of knew about it from there.
Thank you, Dodie, for spreading the good word.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I really appreciate that because I want everyone to know what this
is. I know when you type it out, it's still like red underlines what it's like parasocial is not.
We need to get it in Merriam-Webster.
It's called Merriam-Webster, yeah.
It should be. I feel like by now enough people are aware that they have some kind of parasocial relationship that it should be codified. Also, all the time I feel like we're coming up with new terms and we want to create some kind of lexicon.
Yeah.
Because just last episode we were talking about how, like, whether or not you can have a parasocial relationship with a fictional character. And it's like, I guess so.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about it like that.
I don't know though, so much of it is like seeing the person.
Yes.
Like the reason my friend sent me this Dodie song was because I was maybe having like a little bit, not an obsession, just a lot of interest in like a person online, and
oh my god, tell
and
us
my friend
everything.
Was like, please stop. Like just don't.
Okay, a famous person or a non-famous person?
Just like a musician that I had a big crush on. And
ooh.
And it's so hard coming to LA, right? They're all here. They're all like actually real people.
They're all here.
They're all at Lock Alum on Sunset.
Your word's not mine.
Truly, though. And it's weird because you can run into people and like it kind of flattens out in LA.
It's so weird.
Yeah. Or like when, you know, when Raya was, I guess people are still on Raya. I don't pay for it anymore. But like, you know, like famous people are on the dating scene.
Yeah.
Like they're, it's right there. They're right within reach.
So did you have any parasocial relationships as a child? Anyone you were like obsessed with?
Honestly, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. My parents were very like, you know, I wasn't really allowed to watch Disney Channel.
Same.
Or
Disney
or a
Channel.
Lot of like, I know, right?
That was like the tamest one of my Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network.
No, my parents thought it would make you mean.
Yeah. Disney Channel?
Yeah. Yeah. Because some of the kids on those shows were kind of disrespectful to their parents. Yeah.
You mean like stood up to their parents?
Yeah.
Wow. What a concept. One of my moms is a lawyer and I just like never learned to stand up for myself because she always had like the most cutting argument against me instantly. And I'm like, I have no chance.
You're right. Yeah. You're right.
Fully a lawyer.
Exactly.
No offense to your mom, but lawyer parents outlawed.
Oh my God. Totally.
Against the law.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a 5-year-old and you're really going to like tell me that it's like the rule, like the rule of the law states that I shouldn't have ice cream. Like I have no.
This reminds me of that John Mulaney bit about having a lawyer dad who would come into the room and be like, did you brush your teeth? He's like, yeah, well, this toothbrush is bone dry. And it's like, oh, so you came in knowing the answer, but you trapped me. Mm-hmm. And now I'm perjuring myself. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's so tough.
You're living a constant life of hand on the Bible, telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was talking to my friend about it recently. He was like, you don't have to like justify your emotions, like you're in court, you don't have to take your emotions to court. I'm like, oh, I don't like, I can just feel things. Huh. What a concept.
Okay, so do you have any, well, we just talked about them, but parasocial relationships now?
Again, it's so hard with musicians. I just like want to kiss every musician on the mouth.
I have such a similar problem.
Like, okay. The art form itself is such like, you know, they're articulating things that I could never articulate in such a beautiful way that like it feels like they're like reaching into my soul. And like, how can that not be reciprocated? Like, how do they not know that I'm going to be obsessed with that?
That's so real. Like this, I have this now too, but when I was in 12th grade in high school, I discovered one of the Strokes albums. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one. There were probably like 7 at that point. And I was in a relationship with my high school boyfriend. And I listened to this album and I was like, I was about to leave for college. I was like, they wrote this album about my experience.
Yeah.
Like this album fits exactly right, what I'm going through.
Yeah. It's so hard not to think it's like, this is about me.
Yeah. They understand me.
And maybe if they knew, maybe if I could tell them that this was about me, then it would all click.
Finally, they would see that someone else gets them.
Definitely what they're going for. Definitely what they want.
As opposed to the millions of fans they already have who clearly connect with their music and made them.
Yeah. And especially when you like get a glimpse, because I go to a lot of shows. I love live music. And like when you see them in person, it's just like more solidified. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, they are real. And they're like, you know, like they're just like us, but they're, you know, but they're better.
They're better because they're gods.
Right. Yeah.
So can you tell us, do you want to tell us any specifics or are these people too,
accessible? Yeah.
They're definitely a lot cologne. You know, just like a lot of LA musicians who like, I'll see at 4100.
Yeah.
And just it's so hard not to like just have a little crush on people who are really good at their art.
That's another I think that's another huge component of a parasocial relationship is like, I don't know if this is exactly what you're thinking, but for me, mm-hmm. it's like when I see someone doing something good, I'm like, first of all, competence, very hot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Second of all, I also want to be good.
Yeah.
So I like project onto it that like this has to do with me.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with me.
That is so huge about seeing people on the internet, right? Like where it's a highly curated thing of all the things that they're really good at.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And it just like stirs this primal kind of like competitiveness and also just like, oh, I need a piece of that. Like,
That's so cool. Completely.
Yeah.
Okay, so as on the flip side, you are a creator. People are looking at your stuff, probably feeling the same thing that you just described. Yeah. So do you feel like your audience and your viewers of what you post online, people who have started following you, do you feel like they have a parasocial relationship with you?
I think definitely some of my followers do. And, you know, that comes through and like people sending me, sometimes people send me videos and they're like, this made me think of you. And it's like a cool creative project of like something that's way more advanced than like I could ever make or like maybe one day, but like very inspiring, very like very complimentary. I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much. That's awesome. Some people send me like memes as if I'm like their buddy. And
this drives me nuts.
Right. I'm like, if you were my friend, sure, but we're not.
And this meme isn't related to something I just posted. Yeah. And it's like why
you thought
think this
it was funny
me?
And you're looping me into this. Yeah, you think we're besties. And it, like, I do in some ways like that because I do try to form like real relationships with people online, like fellow creators. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to connect with, and I've actually like gotten some really good friendships out of being a person on the internet and like being a co-creator on the internet. And I think that's like one of the best aspects and still like redeeming qualities of social media. And there are some people who I probably won't ever meet, but because of their just like, they're my cheerleader. Like, I'm really so grateful to them for that. And I do think it's like a little bit parasocial there, but like it's in a friendly enough way that it doesn't bother me. But I do think there is still like a population of people who are like, you know, people are asking me to go on dates and like that kind of thing, which also, like, you know, if it were one of those musicians in my DMs, like, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. There's nothing weird about that at all.
Totally.
So, yeah, you know, it's always a fine line. But they're definitely, you know, I'm on the internet. And people, I think when you're on the internet putting yourself out there and portraying yourself, then people are going to try to relate to you in one way or another. And a lot of that is parasocial in nature.
Yeah, and for the record, I feel like I need to say this every episode. Like, to be parasocial is not an indictment. Like,
we all
have parasocial relationships. Like, you're saying the people who, like, are your cheerleaders. I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's like, so what if they think they know me a little bit? They have nice boundaries. They comment on all my posts. Like, there's not going to be a problem here, hopefully.
Yeah.
It's the people who don't have nice boundaries
that make it a problem.
Too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not, to me, the word parasocial does not connote negativity.
Yeah. And it's tricky because I really want to put myself on the internet as like a very positive person and positive force in people's lives. Like, I think that's one of the most fulfilling things to me is like bringing joy to people. That's why I make like ridiculous things and kind of make a fool of myself in a lot of ways. And like, I'm willing to do that because it'll get people to laugh and like, and smile and be delighted. But then, you know, that puts me in an awkward situation because like, I am actually really sad sometimes.
Yes. I feel this a lot where it's like, if I'm dating someone and they're first getting to know me is maybe like a little bit in person, largely online. Yeah. Then we get together and they're like, oh, there's darkness back there. And I'm like, oh, but of course, because I'm like a human.
Yeah.
I would assume that you would know that. But it's really not what people assume because you don't put it out there.
And it puts pressure on you to then be like, oh, shit, should I show up to this date as like as my internet self?
Right. Which like, I don't want to do.
Right. No. Yeah. It's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys should not show up to the dates as your internet selves.
No. But then there's like a weird inverse thing too that happens where like going on a date and then they'll be like, oh, we should exchange like, you know, Instagram information. Mm. And then they follow me and they're like, and then they DM me and they're like, oh, you make interesting things. Code for you're a freaking
what
weirdo.
The hell?
Yeah. What? Like, you told me you went to school for engineering and then you do this? What is going on?
Dang, well, that's a good canary in the coal mine, though. If they, like,
sure.
don't like yeah. that, like, oh, get yeah. the hell out.
I guess so, but I still, like, second guess myself in that way. Like, there definitely have been people who I'm like, I'm not going to let them see this side of this extremely public side of myself.
yeah, for a
I'm
while.
I'm not going to let them into that. Like, I'm just going to be, you know, this other version of myself. I mean, that, you know, that gets into a whole nother conversation about, like, dating life and, like, how to show up in those spaces. But yeah, it's, how do you know how to, who to be or how to be?
God, so true. When you have
an internet personality.
On top of having an internet personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in general, how do you know?
How do you know who to be no matter what?
Okay. And so your audience, you were already posting art content before you went on Making It. And presumably that's why they slid into your DMs.
Yeah.
So did you already start, were you already like forming an audience before you went on Making It? Did Making It change your audience?
In a very minor way. I really don't know how they found me. I feel very, very lucky. Like, you know, the universe was responding to me quitting my job and, like, you know, rewarding me for that or something. Yeah. I really only had like 5,000 followers at the time that I was found. I was posting a lot of like portraits out of food. Mm-hmm. Like Danny Dorito.
Oh, yeah. That's inspired, man.
Yeah. What are you talking about? Yeah. Why are you saying it like that?
Thank you.
Inspired.
Well, it's like, they never asked us to do anything like that on the show. Like, they, I don't know. They must have known that I grew up on a farm and was like building greenhouses with my mom's or something somehow. No, I hadn't really had big fit. Just, you know, my mom's and my aunties, you know, my mom's are gay. Bunch of lesbians raised me, so you know, yeah. huge group of ladies that are
I love an
on.
Aunt that is just a mom's friend.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That is the best yeah. relationship in the world.
Yes, and so I have true. Like 10 of them, so
yeah.
I'm the luckiest. It's kind of so I did start gaining a lot of followers before Making It aired, but after I got back from Making It, because I was so jazzed. There was such a fire under my butt after coming back from Making It. I was so inspired and motivated. And I just came home with like so many ideas. And I was still like home from the pandemic, unemployed. Like I just have all this time. I'm going to make stuff. And the first thing I made was a pencil skirt out of mm-hmm. pencils. And I made a quick video about it. And I think it was my first video I posted to TikTok. And I was like at a campfire with my friends like an hour after I posted it. And my friends all had their phones and they're like, are you seeing this? Like, I'm like, what? Am I seeing what? And it had gotten like over 1 million views in the first hour. My first video on TikTok. And they're like, you have to read all the comments. You have to respond to them. You have to do this and that. I'm like, you know, I don't know.
I'm at a campfire right
now. Yeah, right? I'm just trying to... But it was cool. It felt, you know, I definitely got wrapped into the, like the viral moment of it all and was like, oh, this could be something like people actually appreciate my like weird ideas and whims. And that's kind of how I started getting more followers. Like the t-shirt really blew up. It was like on the front page of Reddit. I got a couple of like news stations reaching out to me, like a local girl stews herself in a, or like brews tea in a bathtub. and you know, like I would get like people coming out of the woodwork, like elementary school friends being like, you're on the front page of Reddit, did you know that? Like, no. wow. Which then of course, like people asking for the bathwater and like paying me for things. Oh, like, oh no, thank you.
I was wondering about yeah. that. There's some weird
yeah, it's weird being a girly on the internet.
Yeah,
it's so weird. I haven't posted the video yet, but just like, you know, it's summer, I wanted to make a like swimsuit of some kind. I made a bacon bikini and it's fun, it's hilarious, but one, the vegans are gonna be so mad at me. And two, it's me in a bikini and I'm like, oh, am I really gonna
I know.
Yeah. It's hard if you wanna make stuff and then it kind of feeds into somebody else's
yeah.
I don't know, whatever, attraction and you're yeah. like, but that's not what I want right. about this.
And I'm just going to post it anyway because it's an yeah. idea that I think is funny. And that's really like what matters the most to me. And that's kind of like the unspoken contract of being on the internet, is like weird people are going to find it and they're going to think weird things, comment weird things. And it's an unfortunate aspect, but it's just part of it. And like, you know, I've learned to work my way around it. And
yeah. Do you have like sort of a set of boundaries now that you've been doing this for a few years where like, do you read your comments? Do you read your DMs?
I know I should, I kind of want to rethink how I do it, but right now I read every single comment and I read every single DM. I think I just, because I do really love and want to kind of champion the building community on the internet aspect. Like, I do really want to see what people say and respond to them. And when people send me, you know, inspiring things or just say something really nice, like that really does feel really good. And especially knowing that like I made people happy in some way, or like even just made them laugh like a little, or like a little chuckle to themselves. Like that is truly the best feeling in the world. Like I make something that makes someone feel something. I couldn't possibly ask for anything more. And the way that I know that is by people saying that to me.
Right.
And it's so immediate, like especially first video blowing up. It's got to be kind of addicting to get such immediate feedback.
Yeah. It's as soon as, and then it's kind of an exponential effect, right? Like once you start responding to comments, it feeds the algorithm and sends it to more people. More people comment, then I'm, you know, commenting on those comments. So and eventually it dies down and it's fine, but then sometimes the video finds itself back in recirculation later on, and it which is kind of fun. Right? Like, without having to do work, I'm getting more followers all of a sudden. The spaghetti strap top that I made completely out of spaghetti went super viral in India for whatever reason.
Awesome.
And then where I do kind of draw the line is like, there were people, you know, commenting in other languages, and some of them you're able to do like see translation, which is also horrible. Like, they need to work on that. They're not very good at translating things.
No, it's always such a broken translation.
Right, yeah. And that's where I'm like, you know, even if I respond to what Instagram translated you to what you said, it's not going to make its way back to, so I'm just not going to respond, because unfortunately there's, you know, there's cultural differences, there's language differences,
slang differences.
I'll just like... I saw something on Instagram or TikTok of, there was this guy who posted a lot of videos and would just respond to all of them with like heart eyes. And there was like someone who's like, I hope you die or something. And it's like, heart eye, heart eye, heart eye. And I kind of like, you know, I'll like most replies on my videos just to like acknowledge, like tell people like, I see you, like, thank you. You know, you helped me and I want to thank you for that.
And on this note, because this makes me start thinking about strategy, because you're like, you're responding to comments because you know it's going to feed the algorithm. Mm-hmm. It's going to, you know, it all, to me, that's all partly thinking about creating your community and just saying thank you. But to me, it's also about marketing strategy.
Sure.
So how much do you, because you come from a marketing background, how much do you think about this stuff strategically? Like whether it's like planning posts or thinking about interacting with people?
Yeah, quite a lot. You know, for better or for worse, I think what I learned from working, I worked at a brand strategy consulting firm in New York for a couple of years. And, you know, you learn a lot about collecting data, sensing trends, and testing, you know, and seeing what kind of responses you get depending on things. And I even incorporate certain strategies that I learned from brand consulting into like my video editing or like my storytelling through videos. Like there are moments where you're like, you know, you can like grab people and bring them in. And then there are moments where, you know, you have to like keep them. And then, you see a lot of this kind of floating through Instagram with like, you know, they want you to post a certain number of times a day. They're like, they want you to start videos with like a hook. And a lot of that is directly related to like what marketing is and what strategy goes behind there. But the biggest thing that I usually take to put into my work is like the surprise and delight element. That's something we learned to kind of incorporate into a lot of strategy for like consumer packaged goods. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you like Apple packaging is so surprise and delight, right? Like you have, or like you kind of have to like wait for the buildup for like, you know, you lift the perfect white packaging and you're like, I want to get into this immediately. But you have to kind of let it like slide out and then it opens. Like you build these kind of like moments of tension. And then like, and then once you get to that like climactic moment, it just emphasizes the interest in your audience and they respond so well to that.
Mm. That is very fascinating because that's like, I also have a marketing background and I think about this stuff too, but like even that, it's such like a creative approach to thinking, how am I going to keep someone watching for 10 seconds, 15 seconds?
Yeah.
And it's like stuff that I feel like I, and we probably think about a lot, but maybe not necessarily have ever like put into words.
And I don't want to manipulate people. Right. Like I hate the videos that are so like spawn con, like just trying to get people to like, I love this because like shouting at you. I think of it more in ways like storytelling, right? Like the best stories will take you from one like deep emotion, like feeling sad, to being like, oh my gosh, this amazing thing. Like architecture is kind of like this too. Like if you're in a space that's like low ceiling, kind of dark, and then you see just beyond that, like this tall ceiling light space, you're going there. Mm-hmm. You want to go like without anyone pushing you in that direction. Your brain is already anticipating that kind of like positive feedback. And you're like, oh, I want that. So, and I think that's, you know, that's like a dopamine loop in your brain. And like, that's what makes people feel good. And I want to create that for them. Like, I want people to feel like the big open light spaces.
Right. You want to deliver on the promise of like, I'm making something exciting and creative.
Yeah.
Is there this slightly off topic, but are there either like words that you created, or how would you describe like what you do, the kind of art that you make? I know that's like the hardest question ever.
That is the hardest question ever. Yeah. I was at a party last night and of course like knew no one there. And they're like, so what do you do? And I'm like,
And because it's kind of specific, but also like,
but also I do everything,
right?
Depending on what I feel like or what people are hiring me to do. I test it out depending on who I'm talking to, or like to try to like gauge people's reactions. Some of my friends call me a craft influencer, which like, I don't love the term influencer, even though most of the contracts that I sign with brands are influencer. I am an artist first and foremost. Like my means of creating and producing is artistic. Whether or not people think that what I create is actually art is totally up for discussion, and would love to be a part of that conversation because I don't even know. But yeah, I, in a like professional sense, I'll say like I creative direct, I art direct, mm-hmm. I build sets, I fabricate props. I'm a maker. I am a woodworker, sculptor, painter, mm-hmm. costume designer. But I usually start by saying like visual artist, get paid to do a lot of, sometimes I'll be like, I make videos on the internet.
Right.
And I get paid for that. I'm like, wait, no. Because of silly kooky things that I make.
Right. Like the consistent thread seems to be the like delight aspect,
mm-hmm.
but it's so hard to put that into words. If someone's like, what do? You're like, I make delightful art. Like that doesn't make
right,
sense.
Right. Yeah.
It's true though.
Yeah.
I am a delight smith.
Right.
I am a creator of joy. It's so creepy.
I'm a curator of you walking into the big high ceiling
yes,
room.
Yep. You know that feeling when you bite into a lemon cake?
I make that visually.
Yeah.
So how did you start talking to brands and start working with folks in this capacity where they are paying you to make art?
I think the first thing I did, my boyfriend in college worked for this toothpaste company called Hello.
I've used Hello.
It's so great. And the people behind it are really wonderful. The team is, the CEO, Craig Jubitsky, is literally like one of the most wonderful human beings on this planet. And we got in touch and he was like, oh, well, you know, we're kind of new. We need some social media content. Just kind of like, I've seen your other stuff, make whatever. And so I made like some stop motion videos of like the toothpaste, like fireworks for 4th of July and like stuff like that. And then that just kind of like, and I loved doing that. I was doing that while I was like struggling doing engineering in college. And that was kind of my like, you know, once I was done my homework, I would work on that and on my dorm room floor. And that was what really like just motivated. I was like, this actually feels good. Like this feels productive and fulfilling. And because I started building a portfolio in that, I would reach out to brands and I'd be like, I did this for Hello. I should do this for you. And I got some bites. You know, I would do what I do now for like multiple $1,000 for like $200 at the time, because I had no idea how to price my work. And yeah, it just kind of like grew from there. I did a lot of outreach to start out, but now because I have more of like internet notoriety, people reach out to me. I get cold emailed all the time, people asking me to do all kinds of different creative projects, and it's awesome. I'm so lucky in that way.
Is it a lot of them wanting you to put it on your platform, or them wanting it for their platform, or both?
Usually both. I don't quite have enough followers at the moment to kind of justify like it being on my account as like would be advantageous for them as a brand. It's the content itself that has this kind of like, you know, like I said, like the delightful element that brands want to have on their channels.
Yeah, completely.
I would like to get to the point where, you know, I get to kind of 2x my fees, because it's that worth it for them to have their product on my channel. But for now, I'm super happy making things that people, that other brands put on their channels, because then I kind of get to like, yeah, spread my delightful word.
Delightful influence.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
And also, for the record, you obviously make art. If that was up for debate.
Oh,
if you wanted,
yeah.
If you wanted
thank
to debate
you.
About it.
That's
it's
not
very
debatable
obvious.
At all.
Thank you.
You're like,
thank
you know, you. People aren't sure. And I'm like, what?
What?
Also, I feel strongly, I mean, maybe your friends have their own justifications. It doesn't feel like a craft because it's not, to me, replicatable, versus to me a craft is like like something that is made to be replicated by others. Yeah. I could be wrong about the definition of craft.
No, that's really interesting. And I think, and this could be a whole other podcast, but kind of like there are a lot of connotations with crafting.
Yes,
it's like associated with hobbies, and also like mostly I think you think of people who are crafters and you think of like older women,
mm-hmm. yeah.
knitting and crocheting and stuff. But it's to me like such a, like if you're making something that makes you feel good, that is so far beyond a hobby or a craft, or like, I don't know, it's like self-empowerment in a way. And that sounds so cheesy, but it really is. Like if you've ever made something that you like, it's been in your brain, you don't know how to make it, but you work really hard to make that idea that's never been seen before into reality. Like that is one of the most powerful human capabilities that we have, but it's reduced to freaking like arts and crafts, you know?
Totally.
And that's frustrating to me, and I think we need to build our vocabulary around that for sure. But yeah, I know. I don't really respond super well to craft influencer.
I want the, cause it's not that I don't like the word. It's just that the connotation is like, I feel like it puts down like women's hobbies. Is really,
absolutely.
And not just hobbies, but like I have friends who do like just these massive knitting projects,
yeah.
and they're always told like, oh my God, you'd make amazing crafts. And it's just like, they spent like 2 years on the largest tapestry I've ever
right.
seen. And I don't know if it's a craft.
Yeah.
To me, craft is like mm-hmm. something you do with, it's like, here's something you can do with scissors for children
sure.
and whatever. And it's
yeah.
so different. I don't
yeah.
know.
We really could have an entire, like, 17 part miniseries about feminism and the word craft.
Oh, definitely.
And reclaiming our craftiness.
Okay, it's going on the Patreon. Okay.
Our 17 part miniseries where we make collages.
We're crafting while we're.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, circling back to the parasociality of it all, do you think about fostering people having a parasocial relationship with you at all when you post content? Like, do you think, like, this will help them relate to me closer? Do you not think about that?
I do. I mean, you know, most of my content is, again, like, to make people laugh, to make people feel good. And I have this conversation with my artist friends a lot of, like, do you think about how it's going to be perceived as you're making the thing? And it's impossible. I think it's impossible not to. You know, there a lot of artists are like, I just make art for me. Like, that's it. And, like, and that's in some ways, like, very, you know, virtuous.
Good for them. Yeah. Never heard of it.
Like, right. Like, you live under a rock, I guess. Well, you've never considered other people's feelings. I'm always thinking about how I'll be perceived and whether I don't like this aspect, but I do think of, like, certain people who are, you know, my more active fans who are responding. I'm always like, are they gonna, like, take this as an opportunity to post, like, to say something weird, or, like, are they gonna think this is about them? Like, you know, like, crazy stuff. And, like, I just, at the end of the day, have to be like, you know, people are gonna think what they're gonna think. Like, I, you know, there's the rule, I don't, like, third of the people are going to like it, third of the people are going to hate it, third of the people not going to care. Mm. All the time, no matter what. And that's the reality of it. The more people who see it, better. Like, that's great. But people are going to have their reactions, and then that's going to be fine. But I do definitely think about individual people who I've never met. Like, what are they going to think, you know?
Completely.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, there are some people who I also have, like, parasocial relationship, or, like, other creators I really love. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, if they see that, will they think it's cool? Will they like me more? Like, you know?
Totally.
It's like, yeah, because, yeah, it's a weird industry, and it's a weird community too sometimes, because it's like we're all trying to figure it out kind of at the same time. Like, I talk to a lot of my creator friends about, like, pricing, because that's so hard to keep track of too. Right. But yeah, I definitely want them to think I'm cool and to like me.
Don't we all? I want everyone to think I'm so cool.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Just want to be cool.
Yeah, and that's the curse of social media. Even the posts that are like, you may not know, but I'm actually, like, I'm such a moody person. Like, I'm so deep. Like, mm-hmm. you know, so I feel like some creators post that. They're like, it's always sunshine and rainbows, but really. And then it's like them with, like, makeup on. It's like, I'm actually sad. Like, and like,
then 3 days later, yes. It's a BetterHelp ad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Literally, that happened to me with someone I follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, even the vulnerability is, like, a little manufactured. And yes, then you're like, oh, no. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's completely the nature of the internet and social interactions at all. And then mix those two together and you're like, in a pressure cooker situation of that.
Yeah, it's basically, hey, what if we made you socially interact with hundreds of thousands of people?
Yeah. All at once.
Yes.
Every single day. Mm-hmm. And you're only seeing the best of those people. Mm-hmm. But you know that you're not like them.
Okay, so
really weird.
We have some rapid fire invasive questions
yes,
for
please.
You. You'll need your phone for this.
Okay.
And I would say open the app of your choosing, but we recommend Instagram.
Instagram or TikTok, yeah.
That is what I'm on mostly.
So our first question is, how many unread DMs do you have?
Right now, just two. I can't find them. They're so deep down that I actually don't, like, they should have a sort by unread. But yeah, I try to respond to most of my DMs.
Are your unread ones... are they, you didn't want to open them?
No.
Yeah. Sometimes you can tell.
Yeah.
From the first few words and from who sent it.
Yeah.
You're like, that's enough.
Yeah, that's a problem for later or never. Mm-hmm.
How many unread text messages do you have?
Well, they're all read, but none of them are responded to. I'm so sorry, Mom and Grandma and all of my friends. That stuff is really hard.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I see them and I make a little response in my head, but then it doesn't go through.
Sometimes completely. Sometimes that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
I woke up in the middle of the night the other night because someone sent me dates they were going to be in LA, uh-huh. and I realized I opened it and then didn't respond.
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh my gosh." It was That's what happens. You read it and then you're like, "Oh, okay, these dates would work." And then mm-hmm. you close your phone and then you go into the world
and it's lost.
It's gone.
Yep.
Do you have messages in your other folder? Your other messages folder?
Mostly spam.
Oh, good.
Mostly like sex bots.
Yeah, a lot of those.
And then
lately.
Some very like mysterious ones where someone is just like, thank you. Or, this is nice. You're extremely talented and I really love seeing your projects. Okay. I'll respond. I need to respond to that one. Some of them are, like in other languages. I'm like, I'm not sure if this is a bot or if you're actually like saying something nice. But again, I don't know. But yeah, not a whole lot like of meaning in those other folders.
Awesome.
But I look through them. I try to find the real people in mm-hmm. those.
And then this one, this is just a question Jewel and I have for everyone because of a small personal beef that we have. Do you have your red receipts turned on?
You might not have understood the question because the correct phrase is read receipts.
No, it's red receipts.
Thank you so much. It's red receipts because it's showing that you read them.
Right. There's no period, end of sentence. There's nothing else to it.
The first three episodes of this podcast, everyone has been on Jewel's side, and last two, it's been our camp.
Yeah. It doesn't make read receipts doesn't like roll off the top because also read receipts like the sonic like re like that's how it should be.
It's not called like a buy receipt. It's something you bought. That's okay. That was nothing. I thought I cooked.
Yeah,
and that
I call
was literally
them, I call them bought receipts.
Bought receipts.
Everyone does.
Well, I can see I'm outnumbered.
I actually. So you sent me that question ahead of time, and I turned them off because I didn't
you were like
really,
oh right
I was like oh I can do that I'm going to
you had them on though
I had them on I don't really think on purpose I don't have them on my phone like on messages mostly because of the issue I have with responding I'm like well maybe they'll give me a little bit of grace because maybe they thought I didn't right who knows
totally
Instagram I think I just didn't know the worst thing is like when like the creepy people like see that you saw their creepy mm-hmm. message and then they're like, I know you saw it.
You just gave me a chill.
Yeah. No, it's so scary. And I'm like, I don't know. So yeah, I turned them off.
Good.
People don't need to know that I saw. And like people, there's also on what I did have off like all the time is people can see if you're active.
That yeah, I have to turn that on.
Messed up.
No, uh-uh. No,
that's
no,
for exes to be off. Weird. There's
I
no way.
I don't want
to
know how active I am on Instagram. Yeah, the like, you know, hours spent on phone thing,
it hurts.
Yeah. Mm.
I also don't want to know, like, if my friend is online. Like, I'm this is so 2010 for me to know if you're online
oh my God.
Or not.
Yeah, such trauma from AIM.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, man.
Sorry.
Your crush just entered the chat.
I saw you were online, but you didn't respond to my text. And I just think that that's kind of
there's
insane
that too.
Behavior.
There's that, too. I'm about to send a hilarious video to my best friend who I haven't responded about when, like, she's having her birthday party or something. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh, I got to get back to her about that. So sorry.
Yep.
How often do you search for yourself online?
I mean, it definitely comes up. Sometimes other people will look me up and then I'll be like, oh, what did they see? What's on there? It's kind of fun. I have two moms and well, that's fun in itself, but they really long last names. And so they, mine, my last name is completely made up. Like, it's kind of like a half of one of their last names and half of the other. So Lamworth comes from Lamline and Worth comes from Hollinsworth.
Whoa.
So
those are long.
I know. Lamline, Hollinsworth. Oh, how do you even spell either of those? Like, that'd
so
be horrible.
Cute that they smashed them together.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I want more of that because yeah. I ended up with, I mean, I've changed my name, but I had a middle name. I had my mom's last name was my middle name and uh-huh. I had another middle name and oh. my original name was so massive. It just couldn't fit in any box. And I was like, why didn't they like,
yeah,
give me something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
It's just, yeah, I know. And I really do like that about myself because it's like, I'm special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it also makes me very easy to find on the internet, which yes. is like, you know, has its, I think for what I want to achieve in terms of like, you know, just being an internet personality, like it's advantageous for
totally.
Sure. People want to stick an S in there for some reason.
I did. Lambsworth. I did want to do
yeah.
that.
No.
But
yeah.
it was wrong.
Yeah, it was wrong. I'm glad you acknowledged that. yeah, I would say I Google myself like maybe twice a year. Maybe mm-hmm. once a
it's a healthy diet.
Once a quarter.
I think that's
just
healthy.
To see.
Just
yeah.
to see. It's
check
pretty it's stayed pretty much the same. Like my SEO on my website's pretty good. Thank you, Squarespace.
Great website.
Love Squarespace.
Yeah. And then yeah, you know, you're taken right to my Instagram and TikTok pages, which is exactly where I want people to go. So it works out.
Next, what is your blocking philosophy?
Oh, like blocking people?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so like what if they take it personally? Like, duh, that's the whole point.
You're like, it's personal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever blocked anyone. I wow. really don't. Maybe once. If, because I, this is also just like, you know, I'm a scaredy cat and I feel like if I block someone, they're just going to find me. They're going to take that personally. They are going to like,
it's then gonna escalate.
Yeah, it's going to escalate. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that to happen at all. So I just kind of like let it be and hope that they're like, oh, she's really busy. She's so, yeah. she's so
can't
famous
respond.
And busy.
So
yeah.
busy.
Like, I guess I'll let her go instead of being like, oh, she blocked me. Like, I got to go
to a different
harder now.
Revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I don't know. You know?
Interesting.
It's like when you're being catcalled and it's like, I really want to turn around yes. and like say something. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as you do, then you kind of put yourself in danger.
Yeah. It's so real.
Yeah.
Okay. Our final rapid invasive question. And my favorite. Do you know the demographic analytics for your viewers?
I feel like it's like a mix of maybe it's like 60 women, 40 men, and then like age range is mostly my age between 20 to 40.
Mm-hmm. My age.
Yes. Yep.
The age of us.
And it's interesting. When I was on the East Coast, everyone was from New York. And now that I'm on the West Coast, everyone's in LA.
I know. That is weird.
Yeah.
It does. It shows you people nearby.
Yeah.
It's a big part of it.
Yeah. But then I also, it's fun to look into like the other like big cities of the world. Nothing like particular. I mean, once I got a lot of people in India following me after the spaghetti strap top or whatever. Yeah. Thank you, India.
Thanks, India.
lots of people to be, you know, to be following.
The largest population? Of, like
yeah.
given how small it is or something?
I think so.
I'm just saying stuff now.
That or China. I think it like was China and then India surpassed it.
So wild.
But yeah.
So small.
Yeah, I think that's the demographic. I could double check.
I believe you.
Okay. I'm sure it's like
we buy that.
Do you want to know to the decimal point?
I do want to know, but that's for later.
Yeah.
We could talk about that over coffee. Okay, and so first of all, thank you so much for coming on our pod.
Thank you. This has been great.
This has
thank
been
you.
Fascinating on so many levels.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we would love to ask you, what do you have to recommend?
Ooh.
And for example, you could do books, music, okay. cheeses, Wikipedia deep dives, coffee order you like, anything.
Just some ideas.
Any recommendations?
Just some ideas for what you could maybe recommend.
Well, the best gelato place in the world, and I've been to Italy,
yeah,
is actually in Agora Hills. It's called Tifa.
Putting it in my map right
I'm,
now.
Like, I'm so serious about this, guys.
Tifa,
like chocolate and gelato. Like, they have chocolates too, but the gelato is mind-blowing. blowing.
Tifa chocolate and gelato.
Yeah. If you're in LA or the LA area and you're headed to the beach, it's on the way there. It's like in Agora Hills, I think, or Thousand Oaks, something like that.
Yes, it's right by the McDonald's, which is the exit you get off when right. you're going to Malibu.
Yeah.
If you go through the valley.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it's right where you get off when you're going to the McDonald's.
In Agora Hills. It's like,
okay, 100%. For sure.
Yeah, that McDonald's.
Wow.
So good.
Tifa.
Yeah,
for
Tifa.
This recommendation.
And then anyone who's like on an artistic journey, or even not really, I always like recommending when I was like very lost and pandemic-y and like didn't know what art really meant to me or like how to incorporate it into my life, The Artist's Way.
I thought that's what you were going to say, and I feel really tempted to do it. So to hear that you liked it.
It's like, it also taught me, like, you know, one of the main tenets is like, you got to do your morning pages, which mm-hmm. is 3 pages of nonstop journaling every morning. That in itself, like, even if that's the only thing you get from it, amazing things. Like, couldn't afford a therapist at the time. Morning pages were it. Like, that's where all, like, that's where everything was dumped out. yeah. And, you know, you don't have to take it too seriously, but like, it's got a lot of really good stuff. And it's, if you're kind of in like a lost point in your life or need something to kind of like give you that little like motivation or even like teach yourself to be more kind to yourself, that book really did that for me.
I completely agree. I've done it twice.
Nice.
I actually did it with our mutual friend Leah once.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
And yeah, the morning pages, that's, I love them.
Yeah. And there are parts where you're like, this is extremely woo-woo or like...
So annoying. What is going on? I honestly hate her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, I honestly hate the author.
No, she's super annoying. And there's like, you know, you kind of see her like reading it and always like, and then if you just open yourself to like...
God.
To the universe.
Oh, meanwhile, she was Martin Scorsese's ex-wife. So like, yeah, if you open yourself to the universe, you'll get a movie made. If you're Martin, okay.
Right, anyways. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Wait, that's so interesting.
But great book, still do it.
Yeah, no, still do it. Obviously, take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, you know, if you are like me and like hate yourself sometimes or like hate everything you make, that book helps.
Yeah.
You just like separate yourself from your work, but also like integrate yourself into your work. It's got a lot. It's good.
I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting gelato.
Yeah. Do them at the same
those
time.
Those are my two, yeah.
Do you have anything else to recommend us?
Oh, those are enough.
Those Perfect. Are so good.
Those are plenty for you to get started.
To the top. Very good.
Can't wait.
And where can our listeners find you? Do you have anything to promote?
I've, you know, just got a lot of stuff in the pipeline, exciting projects that I'm dropping on my social channels, which are all just at Jamworth, Jamworth. Check me out at jamworth.com. Slide into my DMs.
She's reading them.
Yep, I'm reading every one of them. Say hi. Yeah, it's great. I'll meet you on the internet. See you on the internet.
See you there.
Thank you, Jess. This was amazing.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Parasocial Social Club. To deepen your parasocial relationship with us, find us on any socials at Parasocial Podcast. This podcast is produced by your hosts and Garrett Labonte. Theme music done by Brighty Hicks. And for Garrett's Corner Pick of the Week, bidets.
I don't really have anything witty to say on this one. Just trust me.